Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Let's roll out the podcast for Thursday. I am the Big Jack, and of course we're half hour early because Schomburg Stu is here to fill in for Dan the Man.
Dodging the raindrops.
Yeah, oddly, it's not raining here, but I know we're expecting some, so we'll have to see. But hey, if you want to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need? Head on over to sportstimeradio.com now. Even though it was the 4th of July yesterday, that new blog still went up yesterday morning. So if you haven't been over there to check it out, make sure you get yourself over there to see what's going on. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, you can hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, Stu and I would greatly appreciate it. Dan, I don't think Dan cares, but Stu and I would greatly appreciate it. Don't forget, there's also the Sports Time Radio Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we can't find Stu on Twitter yet, but you can hunt me down. I am at Burke Time if you would like to look me up there. But, you know, Stu, as you know, yesterday I emailed you about some complete stupidity that just completely ticked me off, and I turned off the Cubs game, and I will never watch a game as long as good old Len Casper and JD are doing it. And today I had another problem with one of my favorite shows, and I don't know, have you ever had the chance to see the show called Intentional Talk?
No, is that the ESPN show?
Yeah, well, it actually originated on the MLB Network, but now they actually show it. It airs at 3 o'clock on ESPN2 and then 4 o'clock on the MLB Network. It's generally hosted by Chris Rose and Kevin Millar. Today, John Smoltz was filling in. And, you know, occasionally they do a lot of goofy stuff. You know, they try to have fun. But today they did just one of the stupidest things I think I've ever seen. And I had to turn the show off. And I don't know if or when I'll go back to watching it, because it just really, you know, it was indirectly baseball related, but it was extremely stupid. I don't know if you caught this. Last night in the, I believe it was the Rays-Marlins game, I think that's who the Rays were playing, Carlos Gomez squares around the bunt, the ball tails in on him. Now on replay you can see it actually hits his hand. They don't overturn the call, and they make him finish the at-bat. He ends up striking out. He goes in the dugout, and he does his best. I'm sure you'd remember the Carlos Zambrano fit where he took the bat to the cooler. Yeah. Gomez destroys this Gatorade cooler, then actually punches a couple other ones. Well, today, these idiots on Intentional Talk decided that they would stage an interview with the cooler he took the bat to. And that was it. I was done. The minute it popped up on screen, I turned it off. I never went back to the show.
They think that's funny? I guess they do, huh?
I guess they did. But, you know, the thing that bothered me the most is, you know, we're halfway through a baseball season with a lot of fantastic stuff to talk about. And you got John Smoltz on, who, if you've ever heard John Smoltz as an analyst, he's fantastic. One of the best in the game. And this is what you give him. Now, normally they interview a player and there's some comedy done in that as well. So not only did you have that, because they interviewed Eric Kratz of the Brewers, but then they had this stupid skit. It's not Saturday Night Live. It's Intentional Talk. And you're supposed to be talking baseball. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'm done. And I don't know if I'll bother to turn it back on tomorrow, maybe Monday if I'm feeling like it. But I wouldn't count on it. I may just be done with it for a while. You know, whoever thought that was a good idea should be fired from the show.
Yeah.
Because
I disagree with that. And as you mentioned, it's the halfway point in baseball, and things should be a little bit more serious in terms of discussion now. There's pennant races going on. Things are happening. Players are injured. Teams are still surprising. So there's a lot of things like Atlanta, and there's a lot of things they could talk about, but to do something like this is really ridiculous.
So, but speaking of serious, I found something that was right up your alley today. I was just kind of cruising around like I do online. I found an article that said, Cubs trade rumors, here are 7 potential deadline trade targets. So I will find these 7 guys, and you can tell me what you think, and I will have some follow-up questions, I'm sure. And no surprise here, the top guy right on the top of the list, and I'm sure I'll give you a guess at it. Who's the top guy that this writer thinks the Cubs should go out and get?
Manny Machado.
There you go. Manny Machado's the number one guy on this list. You know, I guess the way I would kind of like you to address it is, do you see the Cubs doing this? And if so, what are they going to give up?
Yeah, that's the thing. And do they really need Machado? I kind of like Russell at shortstop. He's hitting a respectable 285 or so and shows power on occasion, hits to the opposite field. And he's made a few errors, but he's a solid player. And I'm not sure what benefit they would get to get a player like Manny Machado. Now, he would have switch leagues. How would he do in the National League as compared to the American League? There's a lot of different factors to take into consideration, but the most important one, as you pointed out, is who would the Cubs have to give up in return? And any ideas who you think would be involved?
Yeah, well, you know, I would hate to see Russell go because, well, you know, Machado is a better offensive player. The Cubs, when they don't have their heads up their rear ends and they can't hit for whatever reason, have a quality offense. They don't need to add offense. Russell is a better overall defender at shortstop than Machado is. Machado is flashy and he makes great plays, but overall, Russell is the better guy to have out there. What I don't understand with the Cubs, and I'm trying to figure this one out, they have too many regular guys, you know, regular players that they can't get at bats for already. There's not enough at bats for, you know, guys like Albert Elmora and Ian Happ who are bouncing around all over the place. With Chris Bryant out, they found a little more. Joe Maddon has that undying love for Ben Zobrist, and he takes a lot of at-bats away from guys who should be getting them. So, you know, I mean, they literally have 9 or 10 guys that should be playing every day, and you can only put 8 of them out on the field. On another team, Victor Caratini would probably have been the starting catcher last year, but he's behind a better starting catcher here in Wilson Contreras. So he spent a lot of the year at AAA hitting really well. Now they brought him back up to sit on the bench, I guess, because there's just not a spot for him. So I don't know why. Yeah, they had one more bat.
I was going to say the only spot they would have for him is if the intense heat continues. They can't play Contreras every day behind the plate. They have to give him a breather every couple of days or so. And also they can give Rizzo a breather as they did yesterday when Caratini filled in at first base.
Yeah, and I know with Chris Bryant out, I know he's supposed to be back soon. You know, Contreras has played some third base in his career, and he can also play the corner outfield spots. So you could plug Caratini in that way. But, you know, then again, you're looking at who sits. Do you take Almora out? Do you take Schwarber out? You know, is it Hop? You know, because you need Jason Hayward in there. Not only is he hitting, but he's one of the best outfielded defenders in the league. So you really need to have him there. And I hate seeing Zobrist play the outfield because I just don't think he can do it anymore. It's really a juggling act here. And I this one just doesn't make a lot of sense to me unless – you figure if you're going to go get Machado, you're going to have to give up probably Russell or Baez, one or the other. And I wouldn't want to give up either one in a trade like that for a guy who's probably only going to be here half a year.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me at all. And as you say, even if they offered him a whopping deal, he would still wind up testing free agency for next season. Yeah, so I think it's a bad move.
You know, like when you...
Period.
Right, when you ship Gleyber Torres off for Aroldis Chapman... Torres was unproven. He was a prospect, you know, that he hadn't proven anything. You know, as it turns out, he looks like he's going to be a really good player. Too bad he got, you know, he ended up getting hurt yesterday.
Right.
But, you know, you traded that to win a World Series, and that's always worth it. You know, in this case, I don't know if moving, you know, say you have to move Russell and he'll go play in Baltimore for 10 more years or whatever. Does Machado seal you as a World Series contender? I don't see it.
I say no. I say it's a loss of they would lose the chemistry they have now with Russell being an integral part of their team for the last few years. I think it's a bad move. I don't think that they should consider that move at all.
So, all right, well, then we jump to the next guy here, and we're not going very far because we're staying with the Orioles, and, of course, the next guy coming out is Zach Britton, who, you know, had been pretty healthy until last year when he just ended up with a slew of injuries. I think it was two or three seasons ago where nobody could hit him. I think he went through the entire year. I think he picked up like 40 saves or might have been closer to 50 and didn't give up a home run. You know, he slowly worked his way back, and he looks like he's getting back into form. Now, I believe this is a spot the Cubs need. I believe they need to add something into the bullpen. I just don't know which one of these guys you'll like best. But do you see Britton being an add here? And again, you know, you got to give up Dwayne Underwood Jr. to get him. You'd be okay with that?
I probably would, but I think that move makes more sense to me than getting Machado. I think they could.
Yeah, and now Britton is a guy who will be a free agent at the end of the year, so you'll probably, again, he'll probably only be here for half the season.
Well, if it puts him over the top, it's probably worth it, as long as they don't give up too much in return.
Yeah, you know, and that's always the question with, you know, a lot of this stuff is what do you have to give up for, you know, these kind of guys? And I know Britton has been pitching pretty well. He had one really bad outing. And other than that, I believe he's been unscored upon. I want to double check that here before I actually allow that to be said here. Yeah, so far he's appeared in 10 games, but it's only covered 9 2/3 innings. The Orioles are being real careful with him. He's picked up one save, and that ERA is 5.59, but I believe the majority of that came out of that one game here.
One bad outing.
Yeah, he had a terrible outing against Atlanta on June 22nd, where he only lasted a third of an inning and gave up 4 runs. He did struggle the other day against Seattle on June 27th, pitching an inning and giving up 2 runs. But out of his 10 outings, those are the only two he's been scored upon in. So.
Well, he's a possibility.
He could be a little more viable than an option. Now, there are some other relievers here that, you know, I mean, I get what this guy was trying to do here, but I'm not sure if he thought everything through here with this. I think he was just kind of looking at it from a Cubs point of view. The next guy he goes with is Blake Tryon of the A's, who looks like he's finally coming into his own as a closer this year. He's actually got 22 saves. He's appeared in 35 games. He's 4-1, and his ERA is 0.84. All right, now the tough part with this is he's got 2 years of eligibility left. He is 30, but he's kind of a late bloomer. So if you're going to go out and get this guy, you're going to have to give up quite a bit to pick up a guy with 2 years of eligibility left. Are you, you know, again, I mean, you know, we're looking at a situation where it's going to cost you, but the Cubs and the A's have had dealings before. Are you paying this price here? Are you buying the fact that guy has found his groove now and you're going to go out and pay for it?
Well, certainly he's done the job this year, but it's the first time he's really been that successful. I'd like to have him, actually. I mean, he looks like he's, like you say, a possible late bloomer. But once again, I always bring up the question is, who do the Cubs give up in return? That's, yep, to me, is critical in all these deals.
Yeah, you know, and in this case, it's going to be a lot that, and, you know, you also have the A's off to have to decide. You know, they're still hanging around. I know they got a little bit of a hill to climb, but, you know, the only team they're behind in the wild card standings is the Mariners. So they're not exactly out of it. So, you know, I mean, are they going to be selling pieces, or,
what,
you know, what are they going to, you know,
they're what, 4 or 5 games over 500, roughly?
They are. They're actually 9 games over 500
wow.
right now.
Wow, that's
so.
I didn't think they were that far over 500, but so maybe they won't be sellers after all. They have a chance to make the playoffs at least.
So yeah, and then, you know, we move on to our next reliever here, and they're going with Kyle Barraclough of the Marlins. Now, I'm sure he's available because he's a Marlin. You know, at this point in time with the team's record, you know, they're 36-52. I'm sure they wouldn't have a problem making a deal. He's 28 years old. He just took over the closer role for Miami. But now this is another guy. He actually doesn't become arbitration eligible until this offseason. So you'll have him for 19, 20, and 21. You're going to be paying for 3 years of a guy. He does have 8 saves this year. The ERA is 1.17, and he is 0-2. But, you know, generally he's been a setup man, which is something I really think the Cubs need. But, again, you know, the question here, I mean, this guy's going to cost you. I mean, what young guy are you going to be willing to part with to bring him in to do this?
Yeah, the bad thing about the Cubs now is that they don't really have anything great at the AAA level to make a deal and give some prospects to for the Marlin pitcher. They've kind of brought everybody up to the big show right now.
Yeah.
And so who would they give up? Who would they give up? I hate to see any of these guys go. I was down on the hat for a while, but now he's hitting again. So it's very difficult to see who they could possibly give up to acquire someone like this.
So, yeah, and then, you know, again, it's, you know, it's reliever filled here because this is really what the Cubs need, is probably to add a reliever. The next guy, and this guy's been very popular on the market too, this is Brad Hand of the Padres. He's 1-4 this year. The ERA is a little higher than normal at 3.12, but he has converted 23 saves. He picked up 21 last year when he took over the closer role, but as a setup guy in 2016, he appeared in 82 games. So he's been very healthy. The problem with I have here is this is the first one where they put in what they think it would cost the Cubs to get him. So to get Hand from the Padres, they think the Cubs would have to give up one of these three guys, Alberto Almora, Ian Happ, or Kyle Schwarber. Are you willing to make that move? And I can tell you that Hand is he's 28. And he is signed through 2020 with a team option for 2021.
I would not make the deal. I would not make the deal. He's a decent pitcher. He's okay. He probably would bolster the bullpen a little bit, but is it worth giving up those guys, one of those three guys? I don't think so. And what's your take?
Yeah, well, I can tell you, he makes a little over $4 million this year, so he's very affordable. The salary jumps to a little over $7 million next year. Then it goes to a little over 7.5 in 2020. The option for 2021 is $10 million, or there's a $1 million buyout. So he's very affordable contract wise, and you know his numbers are really good. But man, that's a lot to give up. I mean, I could see the Cubs agreeing to give up Almora because, let's face it, they haven't wanted him on this team for a long time. And they did everything in their power not to play him last year, and they tried it again this year, and he just played too well. He kind of forced his way into the lineup. But, yeah, give up on Schwarber? I mean, you know, it still seems, even though he lost the weight, he's still suited for the American League. Could you do that?
Can you give up a 30-homer guy like that? I don't know. I wouldn't. I think the only one they would give up would be Hep, myself, because Almora, there's, I saw a couple of reports, I don't know if you've seen this or not, that claim the real most valuable player in the Cubs this season is not any of the guys like Baez or Rizzo or any of them. It's Almora.
Yeah.
And the guy's, he's batting second in the league right now, isn't he? I think he's qualified in terms of number of bats, right, to be considered eligible.
Not, he's really close, so.
Yeah, because he's a one or two in the league. Maybe Jeanette might be a point or two ahead of him, but that's about it. And how would you possibly get rid of a guy like that, considering how great his defense is? The only thing against him, and he may eventually be like Sandberg, is that he doesn't hit the long ball very often. I would say he's untouchable.
Yeah, but everybody gets too hung up on that. I mean, if he hits 10 to 15 a year, that would be fine. He doesn't need to be a 20
yeah.
or 25 guy.
No, I'm good with that.
Team.
I would say, I would even think twice about making any kind of deal with Almora. He should be the center fielder of the future for at least the next 10 years.
Yeah, but we know that's not going to happen because for whatever reason, there's something there that they're not thrilled about him with. Remember, the knock last year was that he couldn't hit right-handed pitching. And I find it hard to believe he made it all the way through the system not being able to hit right-handed pitching because that's the majority of the pitchers you face. So, they, for whatever reason, they've always came up with excuses not to play him. Then the injuries forced him to play and he performed, so now they're stuck playing him. So I wouldn't be surprised if they moved him, with the excuse being, well, we wanted to get, as much value as we thought we could for him. We were selling high. So it wouldn't surprise me if he's the guy who gets dealt in one of these deals.
Have the rest of the players involved for the potential moves the Cubs are making all relief pitchers, with the exception of Machado?
Yeah, I think we've got two more here. Yeah, the next one that comes along, another reliever, Adam Ottavino of the Rockies. Now, this is a guy who's coming back. He had Tommy John, I think it was in 2016. Really struggled last year. Did appear in 63 games, but his ERA was 5.06. He's been much better this year. The ERA is down to 1.88, and he's even picked up a couple saves when Wade Davis hit that little rough patch there. The Rockies have kind of sunk. They started off hot. They were hanging around the top of the division, and they've kind of flatlined now. They actually managed to get back to a game over 500. But Ottavino is 32, and he is in the last year of his deal. So this is the kind of guy I can see the Cubs adding, because I don't think it's going to take a whole lot to get him.
Yeah, maybe they can give up a little bit less than what the other teams want to get him. His ERA is pretty damn good, the playing for the Rockies this year especially.
Yeah, and then the last guy they round out here with, they go with Seth Lugo of the Mets. Now, the Mets, they've said they've taken offers on everybody, but oddly, Lugo was one of the guys they mentioned they wanted to hang on to. He's appeared in 25 games and actually made 5 starts for them, because it looks like his future is as a starter. He's 3-3 with a 2.70 ERA. He is 28 years old, and he doesn't hit free agency till 2023. So you got another young guy that it's probably gonna cost you, but in this case, I think you're right in when you were saying the Cubs just don't have the minor leaguers to get a deal like this done, because I can't see the Mets wanting, as nice as it would be for them to get an Almora, a Hopper, a Schwarber, it doesn't make sense for the road the Mets are headed down, does it, to take one of those guys in return?
No, not at all. But who would they take?
So, yeah, that's the tough part. I mean, you start looking at the Cubs, minor leagues, and it's kind of like, yeah, okay, who is, who is actually hitting or playing, or who's worth the shots there? I mean, once they stop drafting at the top of the draft, it got a, it got a little tougher. So.
Yeah, right, and look at some of the top players that they've given up now. Torres being one of them, although, as you pointed out, he's been injured. He was recently injured, which is too bad. He looks really strong for the Yankees.
So let's see if this will come up, because you got to figure if they're gonna deal, if they are dealing with the Mets, I doubt the Mets would want anybody out of Triple A. They would probably want a younger guy, a Double A guy or lower. So searching Double A here, there's
a couple of pitchers in Double A. They were doing fairly well, weren't there? I haven't looked in a long time for that. The Double A affiliate.
Well, I pulled up hitting first,
okay.
So I'll go through hitting first, and it looks like the guy with the most regular at-bats who's leading the team is Jeffrey Baez. I don't believe he's related to Javi. 275 with 7 homers and 26 RBIs in 62 games, but he is 24, so I'm wondering if that may even be a little older for what the Mets want to do.
It might
so
be.
So let's see what we have. What we have starting pitching. Starting pitching wise, Trevor Clifton has made 12 starts with a 2.86 ERA. Tom Hatch is 16. Now his ERA is 3.83, but looks good. They have a pretty solid reliever here, a guy by the name of Dakota. And it's M-E-K-K-E-S, however you want to pronounce that. What do we got here? 8 saves, 3-0 with a 0.81 ERA, and he struck out 30 guys in 22 and a third innings. So
walks?
There are some guys, Duncan Robinson, Michael Rucker are a couple starters who are putting up pretty solid numbers. Nothing like lights out, but their ERAs are in the threes, and they're putting up good numbers. So, they would probably have to give up, one of those guys and maybe a Class A prospect or something like that to the Mets. So I don't know if that would be doable or workable. But then, if Lugo does pan out as a starter, you could plug him in the back of the rotation next year.
I would, out of all the players you mentioned, I would like to see Lugo, because the Cubs looks like are going to be in a desperate need of starting pitching.
Yeah.
That's one of their main Achilles or weaknesses. And Lester's number one, but how old is Lester? How long is he going to be able to pitch at that peak, although he's having a great season? But who's number two? Who's number three, if any?
He's left-handed. Hang around a long time.
That's true.
So.
That's true, but they need some starting pitching in the worst possible way. He's so lengthy.
Yeah, the rotation has been a huge disappointment. I can tell you, Lester's 34, just so you know. So.
Okay.
But yeah, kind of looking at, and oddly, besides him, the other guys aren't really old. Like Hendricks and Chatwood are 28, Quintana's 29, and Darvish is 31. But man, none of them have pitched for squat this year. All their ERAs are over 4. Darvish's is just under 5, which is just ridiculous for the money he's being paid. Montgomery has been solid. I know his last couple outings have been a little rough, and you gotta start to wonder if maybe he's hitting a wall, because he was set up to be a reliever. He wasn't
right.
Stretched out to be a starter. So you gotta wonder if that's just gonna kind of crush him there eventually. But looking at these guys, it's just like, yeah, okay, great, whatever. So
well, I have a question for you. I saw something online, and let me put it this way: when Chris Bryan comes back into action, will the Cubs office be not as good when he's in the lineup, because he is
Well, the power numbers are down, but you're still looking at a guy who's hitting 280, which isn't anything to sneeze at. There's a lot of guys who would love to be hitting 280. Rizzo's
right.
Hitting 248. So, You know, it's not like he's going to be a detriment. I would like to see him come back healthy, you know, because the nine homers is what's kind of a shock there. But, you know, he does have 20 doubles, so he's still getting the extra base hits. I just, you know, anytime you bring a guy back like Chris Bryant, I mean, we're talking about a guy who's a former MVP, it's not a bad thing.
Right. I did see one report saying maybe the league has caught up with him and he won't be the great player that everybody thought he was going to be, but he'll be a good, solid major league player, but not in the great category as it looked like he was going to be when he had that monster season. I'm not sure about that, but yeah. I'm certainly hopeful that the shoulder injury has something to do with his power, lack of power, and his inconsistency at the plate. But we won't know until he comes back, and he might not come back Friday. I don't know.
Yeah. But, you know, when they start talking about stuff like that, I mean, couldn't you say the exact same thing about Bryce Harper? You know, I mean, I got his numbers here. The guy's hitting .215. You know, he does have 21 home runs, so everybody kind of overlooks it because, you know, power is king, and as long as you're hitting home runs, it doesn't matter what your batting average is. He's hitting .215. All right, he struck out 89 times in 84 games. So...
I knew his average was down, but I didn't think it was that low, which is kind of shocking.
Yeah.
I thought it was 240, you know, in that area. So I think he's been in a real bad slump the last few weeks, though. That's probably why his average has sunk so low. Hasn't he been in a real major slump the last 3 weeks or so?
Well, I think he's been in a major slump most of the year, but. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
The team as a whole has been as a slump. I know they're on a 5-game losing streak, you know, as they've been, you know, they're slowly turning into one of the more disappointing teams in baseball. They actually slipped under 500. They,
I was gonna
you know,
say
I know they're
under
injury
now, right? Yeah, they're under 500.
Yeah, one.
Now.
They're like the poster child for injuries. You know, if an injury is going to happen, it's going to happen to the Nationals. So.
Yeah. And it looks like Atlanta's not a fluke. They're not one of these guys that got out to a team to get out to a great start and then fall back toward the end of the season. It looks like they're going to be in contention the entire year, at least the way I see it now. They got a lot of good talent there.
Yeah, I'm interested. You know, like my concern with Atlanta was I'm interested to see how their starting rotation holds up. Because, you know, while the top guys are pitching well, except, well, you know, Turan has had his ups and downs. But, you know, Newcomb and Fulton-Awitz have been really good. You know, they haven't been through this. And sometimes, you know, your first time through, you end up folding and wilting and, you know, those things happen. And, you know, they're another team. They don't really have, you know, a veteran to kind of rely on. You know, they've been using Brandon McCarthy and Anibal Sanchez. And Sanchez has been magical. I don't know how he figured it out after getting cut by two teams. But, you know, McCarthy's hurt again, which is a surprise. So, yeah, so far so good. But I still wonder if they're going to kind of start to wilt here when the second half kicks off after the All-Star break.
Man, August and September, those are the critical months. And we're getting closer and closer to August. The team that surprises me with their pitching has been Milwaukee. Look how they did against the Twins. After how many runs did the Twins score against the Cubs in those three games? And then they get shut out by the Braves, by the Brewers. And what did they score, two or three runs in the three games?
Yeah, I thought it was three. You know, and the sad part is, you know, Milwaukee's doing it without their best pitcher. You know, they don't have Jimmy Nelson back yet.
Right.
So.
Right, and they, of course, the Braves, right? I keep saying the Braves. I keep thinking of the Milwaukee Braves, but that's long gone. But the Brewers have the best record in the National League. Of course, the Cubs are right behind them.
Yeah, they have the series opening up tonight with the Braves. So it's,
yes.
You know, the good old battle of first teams. Yeah, Milwaukee's the only team in the National League with more than 50 wins. They have 51. So...
I'm surprised they're playing tonight, actually, because after tonight's game, there'll be three games in hand against the Cubs, three games more than the Cubs have played. So I figured they'd be off tonight, but it'll be a tough series, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, it's a four gamer too, on top of everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's definitely interesting. You know, like tonight, it's going to be Julius Chassin for the Brewers against Max Fried for the Braves. You know, Chassin, you know, he's one of these, you know, he's kind of a veteran journeyman. He bounced around a little bit, but, you know, he's made 18 starts for the Brewers. He's 6-3. That ERA is 3.71. So he's putting up solid numbers for them. And you know, they're kind of doing these kind of guys.
Now these four games will be in Milwaukee, correct?
Yes.
And it looks like to me that the fans are starting to believe the hype finally. They're starting to come out in pretty substantial numbers. Because a lot of their games recently have been almost 95% to 99% capacity.
Yeah, well, you know, it's that time of year now. You know, we're over the halfway mark, and you know, if your team's doing well, you know, you want to make sure you're out there to see it. So it's time for, you know, everybody to kind of start jumping on. But you know, Milwaukee's been here before. You know, they did this last year as well.
Right.
You know, they hung around right at the top of the division, and so I'm interested to see if, you know, if they'll go out and make try to make a big move, if they're going to try to add a big time starter, or you know, if they'll look for, you know, I think in reality they could really use a shortstop, because you know, Arcia has struggled badly this year, and they were playing Tyler Saladino until he got hurt. So I really think they could use a shortstop in nature there if they could find a guy.
Well, there certainly should be buyers. And remember,
you know, they haven't really, you know, I mean, like, you know, last year they were buyers, but they weren't big buyers. They seem to go out and make tiny moves. You know, I want to know if this is the year they're finally going to go out and, you know, go get a big time guy.
Yeah, we're looking at the records, and I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but last year at the All-Star break, the Cubs were below 500. A couple games below 500.
Yeah, were they? If not, they were right there. You know, they were, because they, yeah, remember, they really struggled last year.
If they're going to have a second half like they had last year, they would breeze to first place.
Well, you know, it's looking like they're going to need something to that effect, right? So.
Right, and the pitching is what really scares you right now with the Cubs. Starting pitching.
Yeah.
And that's the name of the game.
Yeah,
and
pitching,
they just don't have it.
It's just been, yeah. So.
Yeah.
You know, that's just been kind of as.
Yeah, it's really been bad. What's your take on Hendricks? Why is he having an off year? Based upon what you've seen
mound. It's so tough to tell. You know, honestly, I'm to the point now where I think he's just having an off year because I picked him in fantasy for the first time ever. You know, he's on one of my fantasy teams. Normally that can be just the death of a guy. And I'm just wondering if I cursed Kyle Hendricks and it's over for him. But, yeah, you know, sadly I don't know enough about, you know, like, pitching mechanics or anything to be kind of like, how, you know, who's this or who's that, but yeah, he just doesn't seem like the same guy. It's almost like his location isn't good enough anymore.
A lot of his pitches to me seem to be elevated a lot more than they were last year, and therefore much easier to hit.
Yeah, normally, in reality, you know, some pitching has a lot to do with, you know, you need that little bit of luck, you know, and when you miss and the ball gets out over the plate, you need the guy to pop it up or hit it hard right at somebody. And, you know, right now, Hendricks isn't pitching with any luck. If he makes a mistake, it just gets crushed. That's been a lot of Cubs' problems.
Yeah, they've been hitting him awful hard recently. But maybe the professor will find what he's been doing wrong by studying some video. You think, yeah, I guess that sounds so easy, right? Well, we'll compare how he did when he was pitching good, and look at the video and how he's pitching now, and then an easy fix. but it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah, you know, you would think, I mean, it sounds so simple, but, mean, you know, pitchers a lot like hitters, you know, guys get those books on you. And, you know, they realize, okay, you know, he's going to come with this or he's going to come with that. And they start looking, you know, for certain things in certain counts. And, you know, these guys are in the major leagues for a reason. So they get what they're looking for and they're going to hit it hard.
Yep. That's, as we always point out, there's only 750 players who can play at this level. So you gotta be pretty talented to achieve it, even though their average might be 210. But of course, as you point out, if they have 30 home runs and driven 70 or 80 runs, that will be overlooked, like Mr. Harper. Well, that's pretty dismal batting average, though. Years ago, he wouldn't be in the league. He'd be back in the minors.
So, but yeah, that's all changed with
average. That changed with the long ball. Like you said, it's a 215 average 20 years ago, 25 years ago. They would not be in the majors for very long, no matter how much power they had.
Yeah, there were very, very few guys who hung around back then with that kind of average.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had to be really, really special.
Yeah. So. Now it seems almost a norm. If a guy hit, you always say, if a guy hits a lot of home runs and maybe drives in a fair amount of runs, what do they care if he's hitting 198 or 210 or whatever it is?
Right, and strikes out, you know, 200 times plus a year.
Yeah,
so.
It's a different game now. And I'm not sure I like it that way myself.
No, well, you know, it's odd because they always complain about pace of play and they want the games to go faster. And what a lot of these idiots don't realize, and I thought it was humorous because, one of the ex-GMs who's on the MLB Network pointed out that the new hitting approaches and more strikeouts are going to make the games go longer because the ball's just not being put in play.
No.
So,
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting is that the Cubs have now won 6 games in a row, right? Why did they start winning? Not because of the long ball. Because they've been putting the ball in play. In fact, the game that I went to, as you know, I went to the game Saturday. I don't think the Cubs hit a home run that game, although they belted out 20 hits.
So, yeah, it's odd how, you know, the art of hitting just kind of disappeared. And it's so weird because, you know, you watch a game and you see these dramatic shifts and, you know, I'm just kind of like, man, why doesn't this guy just, you know, stroke the ball the other way and take the single? And yet they repeatedly pound the ball into the shift because they want the home run.
Yeah, well, Rizzo's a prime example of that. The way he hits the ball hard on the ground, but into the shift every time. All he has to do is punch it into left field for an easy single.
So, yeah, you are right. They've won 6 in a row. They actually currently have the longest winning streak in baseball.
Yeah, and they've been putting the ball in play. They haven't been hitting that many home runs, but they've been putting the ball in play. It's funny, talking about take Baez for example. I said, this guy's really turned the corner the last 6 games. He's hitting the long ball. He's putting the ball in plate also. And then after 6 or 7 games, he reverts back to the old Javi. The other day, I don't know if you saw it, when he swung out in a pitch that was 3 feet outside on the ground. So he forgets. If he could just remember to be a little more disciplined at the plate, there would be no stopping this guy. He's got a bundle of talent.
Yeah, it's the oddest thing because, you know, you see these guys and you're like, God, you know, this guy is so good. And then you watch him and you're like, why did he just swing at that ball that bounced in front of home plate?
and a lot of Cubs do that too. And you figure that by now they're not rookies anymore. They've been around 2 or 3 years. You think they would start avoiding this, but They don't. It's the same thing.
You know, I mean, I understand it. You do get flat out fooled. You know, there are those times. And I did look here. Yeah, Almora does qualify for the batting title, and he's 2 points behind Scooter Gennett.
So it seems to me that in my opinion, he is untouchable. I mean, you can't give up a defense.
Yeah, but he only has 4 home runs. They'll have to throw him away. It's not good enough.
As he gets his doubles and singles, it's okay with me if he only hits a dozen, like you said, a dozen home runs, we'll even hit that many. But I'd be ecstatic if he went 12 to 15, like you said.
Yeah, then he may have accidentally pulled the other way a time or two, and that's just cause for, you know, I'm surprised they haven't cut him. So.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
You know, God forbid you try to pull the ball out of the ballpark every time.
Well, they could do a DFA on him, just like they did for Jimenez, right?
Yep. So, yeah, oddly they bring Jimenez up and he doesn't even get to catch Hugh Darvish, which was apparently the only reason he was here.
Right, exactly.
So,
and they let him play 12 games or so, and he hit a buck 40 or so, and didn't look very good at the plate.
Yeah,
they had to bring Caratini.
I expected him to look. So
Exactly right.
So.
He looked like I expected him to look, and which was not too impressive. But I don't even know if he's packing AAA anymore. He may be. I don't know if they even released him outright.
Well, no, they have 10 days. Technically, they have 10 days to trade or release him. And it, you know, if not, he can accept an assignment to AAA. So you know, I don't know if anybody's looking for a catcher. You know, I know Houston just put Brian McCann on the DL, but they have Max Stassi and Evan Gaddis, so I don't think they would be in the market. You know, occasionally, you know, somebody will grab a veteran like that if they, you know, if they just kind of have a need to fill for a little bit. So, maybe he'll get picked up. If not, I just assume he'll end up back in Iowa.
Yeah, probably so. But he's been around a while, though. I guess he's made his bucks, so with a limited skills in the plate. So he's been around for some time. No youngster.
Yeah, it's weird that if you're a solid catcher, you know, if you're really good defensively, you can hang around as a backup for a relatively long time. You know, if you look, I mean, A.J. Ellis is still in the league. I think he's a Padre this year. And, you know, he's pushing 40.
Yeah,
he's now a veteran guy. And, you know, he's, you know, had a job for quite a while. I got to see here. He's actually 37. I made him a little older than he was. But, he's been around 11 years.
You know how difficult it is to hang around as a catcher for that many years? It's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Probably the most difficult of all positions. I mean, that's impressive.
But, yeah, you know, there were, you know, a lot of guys made, you know, I remember there was always a running joke in Cincinnati. You know, obviously back in the 70s, Johnny Bench was going to catch every day. And his backup was Bill Plummer, who made a career out of just being Johnny Bench's backup.
That was just kind of
how it went. I mean, obviously, you know, the contracts weren't quite what they used to be there, but you know, he had a 10-year career as Johnny Bench's backup. The most games he ever appeared in was 65 back in 1975, but he's got some World Series rings from being on the Big Red Machine.
Yeah. And that's a nice accomplishment to have, right?
Yeah, you know,
he didn't wear his body out too much either, did he?
No, not at all. You know, and I mean, looking at it here, he actually didn't appear in any of their playoff games. So, humorously, he got a start with the Cubs. He actually spent 1968 with the Cubs. And he was traded to the Reds. Let's see. Do you remember any of these guys? Well, actually, he was traded. Well, you'll remember this. He was traded for Ted Abernathy.
Oh, well, Ted was okay with the Cubs. The submarine specialist.
Yeah.
And fans liked him. He was pretty – I think, in fact, if I remember correctly, he may have had two tours of duties with the Cubs, Abernathy, I think. I'm trying to remember now. It's been a while.
Yeah, they have him, they have him here. He spent part of 1965 and 66 with the Cubs before he went to Atlanta in 66. And then, yeah, he came back in that trade we were talking about in 1969, and then he got shipped off to St. Louis by the Cubs in 1970. So, yeah, he stuck around for 14 years as a reliever. Had a career 149 saves before that was really the it thing. So not bad.
No, no. And unfortunately for him, though, he was in the era where the Bucks wasn't like they are now.
So, yeah, here, humorously, they report one of his last salaries in 1971 is $38,000. So, yeah.
Yeah. Any major leaguers making that money now?
Yeah, so, I think minor leaguers do better than that now, don't they?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, it's a different world.
But yeah, that's just, you know, one of you know, one the way it is now. You know, now they get millions upon millions to play baseball or any other sport. So.
And my pocketbook felt it when I went to the game Saturday, by the way.
Yeah, you were saying the tickets were pretty pricey, and then you actually broke down and bought some food.
Yeah.
So.
Well, here, let me see how good you are. We went down to the concession stand and we had I had a foot long dog. Rich is a vegetarian, so he had a veggie dog. He had a beer. I had a Pepsi, and we got a bag of chips. Now, what's your guess as to what that would cost?
Oh, geez. $40?
Very good. Very good. Actually, $43. I gave the guy $45, didn't bother getting my change back. I said, let's get back upstairs. That's a pretty good guess, though, John.
Yeah. Well, you know, and how did you like the seats? You know, I know luckily you guys were covered, so that was a big plus because it was hot.
Yeah. I still refer to the seats the same way I remember when I went years ago. I call them, we were in the lower grandstand, and there were damn good seats. And fortunately, when Rich was scouting for looking at the tickets, and I said, be careful that there's no obstructions. And the first ones we found were obstructed. So we looked a little bit further, paid a couple bucks more, and we got seats where there was no obstructions. About 15 to 20 rows to the right of us, people were sitting by the post, and boy, that is annoying.
So, and now what did the tickets cost you to sit there?
I think they're around $80 a piece. These are the cheap seats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah, you know,
cheap seats.
Yes, I don't know if that. I don't know if I consider that cheap, but you know, that's. I guess they do now. I guess that's how it's looked at, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, we were very fortunate not to be in the sun, and in the lower box seats, I don't know what they call them now. Some people were left after three or four innings. They couldn't take it. And the bleachers cleared out quite a bit. It was so hot. And in fact, on the field, and I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but five players between both teams had to leave because of heat exhaustion. That's how bad it was on the field.
Yeah, I did see that was – I remember Almora cramping up trying to run the bases.
Right.
So.
Right, and I think Rosario left. The cup pitcher, and I forgot which twin players left, but one of them, I think the catcher was, I noticed it myself when he was running out of ground ball, or maybe it could have been a hit. He looked very wobbly going to first base, and he was really staggering, so it was brutally hot for that day, for the entire three-game series.
Yeah, so yeah, that was definitely rough. You know, I watched the game looking for you, but I'm sure where you were, where
I waved to the camera a couple of times. I actually did, and people were waving, and I waved to the camera, the roving cameraman. But I guess I didn't even make it to the auxiliary scorecard scoreboard. I looked there, I didn't see my smiling face.
When you go again the next time, you look at the field or something, so we can
right.
see you.
Yeah, that was the first time I've been to a game in years and years, and it was nice being back there though.
So yeah, now did you notice? You know, I know they've made a boatload of improvements since the last time you were there. Did you notice anything? Anything kind of stand out?
Well, the only thing, of course, is that they got that instant replay in the scoreboard. They put in the other scoreboard in the left field line. I think they've added a few seats in the bleachers. As to the concourse itself, it looked like the same old to me. Although I did see Gallagher Way. You may have seen that. They show that sometimes the kids out there by the grass, and that's something that wasn't there before. That looks pretty nice, but why do these guys don't have seats to the ball game? They go there and hang around and have a little picnic on the grass. I don't see it, but they seem to be enjoying themselves. I got to tell you one other thing. This scared the hell out of me. Well, really, we were leaving. Of course, it was mob leaving the game, and they have policemen patrolling in the streets, and one of them had an AR, holding an AR.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, my goodness, that is scary. That thing was immense. I mean, I take a look at that. I said, boy, you have to be so careful now. In fact, Rich had to go back in the second time because somehow his wallet pinged. I don't know why, and he had to take his wallet out, and it's like going through an airport thing sometimes. I didn't have that problem. I guess my wallet must have been thinner than his.
Yeah, he must have just, you know, it's all the cash he's carrying, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That policeman carrying that rifle, my goodness.
Well, yeah,
it's different now. You got to be careful. These ballparks are prone. I mean, you know, they're targets. You got to really be careful now. It's very tough since 9/11, and you have to be extremely careful at all these sporting venues.
Yeah, it's definitely a different, you know, a different world now than it was.
Yes.
So.
Unfortunate. Yes, we did stick around for the full game, by the way. Yeah, we did stick around for the full 8.5 innings.
So, yeah, well, that, you know, that's a plus. A lot of people don't make it. And you had a full day. You guys were down there early to go to, what was it, the Art Institute first?
Yeah, we walked from the Union Station to the Art Institute. That's not a short walk, but it was fun. We just scratched the surface of the Art Institute. It's so huge there. There's just so much to see. And we were there a couple hours and barely saw too much of it. It's a great place if anybody ever wants to go down there. I recommend it highly. But stay 4 or 5 hours if you're an art aficionado like you are.
Yes. You know me. I am an art lover. Now, I did see here, I know we're running out of time, but it looks like Wilson Contreras has inched ahead of Buster Posey in the All-Star voting. Do you see him holding on, or do you think Posey gets the starting job back?
Well, he might get the starting job back because of name recognition, not that he's doing all that well. He's not doing too badly this year, but Contreras has turned it up a notch the last couple of weeks.
A lot of today, but it's still going to be back. I believe it's one of two more Thursdays now, so we'll be able to catch him again next week if you want to meet him here. Otherwise, Dan and I will be back tomorrow at 5:30 if you just want to come by the zone. As always, you don't have to do one more way. SportsCallRadio.com. If you don't see that ball for the holidays, get over there, check it out today. Link over to the Facebook page and give that a like, but don't forget to follow me, which is at SportsCallRadio. You got to follow Sam for another 2 on Twitter. Maybe we can do that one of these days. But as always, if you think for listening live, but remember, you can listen to the podcast anytime you want over at TuneIn.com.